Go ahead. I'm Wendell. I'm learning what it means to live loved by God. I'm in a pretty good place right now. Kind of, this too shall pass, but anyway, I'm in a pretty good place right now. I'm recovering from addiction to food and work and control and emotional and spiritual abuse. I've had issues with porn, alcohol, rage, panic, and depression.
I'm Karen, and I'm learning to be loved by God for who I am, just the way I am. I struggle with trust issues, control, codependency, the not enoughs, and spiritual or religious misleading. We have coined a new phrase, Robbie and I, religious misleading instead of religious abuse, maybe.
That'll work. Yeah. We want to get a lot of different people up here and hear what they have to say. And sometimes it's really hard just to plunge in the deep end by yourself. So I want to kind of throw some softball pitches to her. Real easy to hit. No curveballs, no knuckleballs. And she's already been able to look at the questions, so she kind of.
So that's henceforth. Lewis told me to take notes if you need to.
Yeah, so there you go. So to start out with, just share a bit of your backstory, maybe in your about your family and your church.
First, I'm going to preface this with something that Joellen said the other day. My worst fear is to be misunderstood or to not exactly say what's in here. Like, sometimes your mind works twice as fast as your mouth, and so there's all this stuff I'd like to say, but then it gets jumbled by the time it comes out, so I'm going to try really hard to slow down and to make my point without tears. My background, I have decided a childhood unlike many of you that come here. I had two loving parents, same parents, were married a long time, church-going family, father that worked hard, retired from Sears. My mother was a teacher. I had three siblings. We were in church every time the doors were open. My whole family was... Should I say what denomination?
We can bleep it later if you want.
Oh, well, it's, and I think I've even said it, maybe I've said it before, very legalistic. I didn't know that's what it was called till later. But to me, it was like, and I've had trouble saying this even in class, it was almost idealistic childhood. I mean, my parents loved each other tremendously. I knew it. They showed it. They loved us. They supported us. We didn't make a lot of money. I didn't know that we weren't rich. Cared for, tucked in at night. Grandparents that felt the same. So that part, you know, there's nothing I can say that was bad about that. And I know that sounds crazy to some people. And I was really embarrassed to even say that sometimes because I would sit in a group that their stories were very different than mine, and I felt guilty about that instead of blessed about that. So I'm learning to feel blessed about the way I was brought up and not, it's crazy to me to sound like it sounds that way. But anyway, but the faith that we were brought in was, let me put it in a nutshell, we were the only ones going to heaven, and everybody else was in error or was false teachers. But it wasn't like drilled into our heads. It wasn't beat over the head. It was just subtle, and it was done in a loving. My parents believed that to their core, that they were reading the Bible correctly, and we were the only ones that were kind of reading it the way that it was intended to be read. Till I was in high school, did I start questioning things that we did and why we did them that way? Most of it was just baptism saves you. You must go every time the doors are open. You must work. You can't say no. It was left up to me to save myself. That's what I got as a teenager, that I was walking a very fine line, and I could fall off at any moment. One moment I was in, one moment I was out. And I said that was very hard as, you know, I wish I'd have known different in college. Been a little bit easier on me. I hated to disappoint anybody, especially my parents, especially God. So I struggled. I felt like I was treading water all the time, trying to be good enough, trying to be do everything right. We kind of had a list of, you know, the typical don't drink, don't smoke, don't cuss, don't have sex, don't do, you know, these are the things we don't do as a family and as a church. But there wasn't a lot of the these are the things we do. But I remember the things I wasn't supposed to do, you know, and I wasn't supposed to kind of like spend the night with anybody and go to church with anybody else. I wasn't supposed, you know, it was better for me not to read anything about anybody else because it would confuse me. And I think it was, and I've told this before, I think my father, it was like he thought he had to save his family. And the easiest way is to keep everybody believing the same thing. And religion wasn't something we argue about. This is something that keeps us together. And this is the way it is. And I loved and respected my father more than anything else in the world. And so it was, I mean, I loved church, which is fine. I mean, I loved going to church. And I wanted to be involved in everything that happened, the retreats. And I end up when my kids were there. Even though I struggled, what did I do? I kind of did the same thing to my kids. This is things that we kind of do and things I wish you would stay away from, and it will make you a better person if you hang out with kids that don't do that, and blah, blah, blah. So I've talked to them about some of it. They're in their 30s now, and the baby's 26, so we've had a lot of good conversations. But a very fear-driven shame, guilt, and I was already that kind of kid. I was a rule follower, and I laugh. I said, I don't know. The thing I did, you know, I didn't do any of those things. I didn't even want to because I was afraid of fear of God and fear of my parents and disappointing them. And so I tried to really walk that straight and narrow. Trying to think of something else. Since that was way long, there's just something, if I can read it, and this is not my quote. I wish it was. And something else, it wasn't a lot. It was a lot about knowing the scripture. Knowing. Read. I remember when I was younger saying, because I had a conversation with a friend, and they were saying, it's about relationship, you know, a personal relationship with God. And I remember being told, we do not have personal relationships with the Lord Almighty. And I was relational, and I was emotional, and I liked that idea, but it was like, this is, you know, he is an awe. He is God. You know, we don't have personal relationships. So that's part of that. And then, you know, not a lot about grace and mercy till I came to Broadway. And I felt like it was kind of up to me if I got saved or not. And that was pretty sad. And I read this in this book that I was reading. I don't remember even who said it. It said, my quest to serve God in the church had exhausted my spiritual savings. My dedication to being good has cost me a fortune in being whole. Mm. And so, I don't know, that kind of...
Say that last line again.
Shoot. I know. It said, my quest to serve God in the church had exhausted my spiritual savings. My dedication to being good has cost me a fortune in being whole.
A dedication to be good. Wow.
I don't know if that answers that question.
That's a good
one. That was too long.
No, that last statement's worth the price of admission. So first few times in Pathway, what in the world were you thinking? I mean, you got this. You failed to say that church you brought up had no mechanical instruments.
Yes, we had beautiful a cappella singing, but instruments were a big fat no.
So you come to Pathway and we play rock and roll.
That was one of the reasons I came. Because I was in musicals and stuff in high school. Singing was my thing, which that worked in a cappella. I learned to sing alto through my mother. My father was a song leader in the church. So, yes. Well, let me back up a little bit. We got invited to Broadway, too. There was a series on mercy. And I thought, man, I missed that. I'm going, you know, run. And started coming, and I can't even explain, because like I said, I wasn't allowed to visit a lot. The first thing Gary and I did when we left the other church, we visited a Presbyterian. We went to other churches, and I thought, these people are just like us. They might do things different. You know, what was wrong with, I don't understand. Both my parents have passed away now. And I laugh and I say, Daddy knows now, he's up there, that Karen, there's lots of people up here, all kinds of people, it's okay. You know, woo, we're not the only ones here.
Shavy couldn't send you a sticky note.
Anyway, and all my kids play guitar, which is great. But anyway, but when we started coming to Broadway, the first thing, because I was like, I was hooked. And Gary goes, this is really the first place we've been. That's, you know, we kind of had stayed away from just institutional church, period. And I thought, I just want me and God, and just, you know, we'll search and figure out our journey, where we're going from here, because I was at that church for 59 years. That's the only church I ever went to. But we wanted to see what else was going on at Broadway, and we heard about Pathway, and we wanted, if I'm going to come here, I thought, I want to see what all these other things they're into all over the community and stuff. So Pathway was one of them, and I can't even explain it. I had never been to anything like that before. It wasn't what I expected. The people weren't the people I expected. I will tell you what I expected, because I had heard about Celebrate Recovery in ins and out places, but I expected alcohol and drug abuse. That was pretty much what I had ever heard. That kind of addiction was what it was. And that first time, there were all kinds of people. It was very diverse. And Megan Davidson, I'm almost positive, was one of the first people that I heard coin that phrase, the not enoughs. You know, I'd heard about AA growing up and stuff like that, and I thought, that's kind of what this feels like to me. People are standing up and telling their stuff. And I don't know, there was just something, we talked about it forever, and I don't know that we've stopped coming after that first time, because it was like, I'm just going to read it because it sounds better. One of the first things that impressed me, there were leaders in our church. It wasn't just the people that, it was leaders in our church standing here saying the same things we were saying or that other people were saying. That was amazing to me, that the vulnerability of a leader, because we had put leaders in our churches up high, and we just thought I didn't think they did anything wrong. If you were going to be an elder or you were going to be a minister, you didn't do wrong things. You know, you were above that. And so to hear people stand and say things in front of people, one of the big things was there wasn't any judgment. There was lots of hugs, there was lots of nodding. And I thought, when I left that night, I told you, this is what church is supposed to be. It was real, it was authentic, it was honesty. Where I came from, you didn't air your dirty laundry. That was told to my face. We don't tell our troubles in front of church people. So if you had struggles, that's what you ended up, then I'm the only one. I'm the only one that's not spiritual enough. I'm the only one that apparently, because they would say, you need to read your Bible more. You need to pray more. You better go to church a little more if you're dealing with something that's not right. You know, so you get that old thing about, why would I go to church? They're just going to make me feel worse. You know, so hearing somebody say things that I was struggling with, or that things other than, I didn't know there was other things to recover from, apparently, than, you know, addictions. And just people, like you said, with depression and anxiety and grief. And I thought, we all deal with that. Why is this room not full? I still don't understand that.
Me too.
Still don't understand that. We can't be the only people that are struggling. We can't be.
Now you're preaching. That sounds good.
I'm preaching.
Amen.
And then we're talking about classes. All that I remember, because Gary went to the first one and I didn't go. And after that first class, he said, you're not going to like it. And I said, I like to go to class. I'm a teacher. I'm a retired teacher. I like to take notes. I like to talk. And he goes, that's why you're not going to like it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, Karen, you have to be totally quiet while somebody's talking. And you can't fix them. You can't comment. You have to be quiet. He said, I don't think you can do that. And at first I was a little annoyed and I thought, no, he's probably right. And when I first went to class, I did feel that. Like I was sitting on my hands and I was like, you know. But anyway, back to Pathway. The classes, you know, then I was mad because I didn't get to go to the first one. I think it was Why You Believe What You Believe, which I definitely needed that one. Because I wasn't sure about that, but that's where the rubber meets the road in your class, because you're in a smaller group, and he asks some really deep questions. And it's changed my life. I said it makes you delve deep into your past and figure out why you think and feel the way you do. I'd never really thought about it, I guess, why I think and feel the way I do. That's when I'm going to take a pause and I want to read something. And I know I shouldn't read to people, but as you can tell, this little book is little book is worn. If you know anything about me, I'm a reader and I'm a quote person.
They need to see all the different colors.
I read this book for my daughter gave it to me, I don't know, 2012. So I've read it every year. It's one of those daily devotional things. But talking about what I told you about my past and then coming to Pathway, I can't say this any better. Value, because I used to resent my past really bad. I did. I resented it, and then I thought, I don't resent my parents. I don't resent the way I was brought up. It wasn't that I resent the way I was brought up. There was so much they left out. Mm-hmm. The grace and the mercy and the be yourself. And it, instead of being, believe the way that we're going to tell you to believe. And because I trusted my parents, I trusted the people that I went to church with, my Sunday school teachers, I just fell into that. I just believed what I was told without asking why. And that's one thing about Pathway. You can ask why, over and over. And you can tell people, and you can disagree, and you can argue, which I think that's part of your spiritual journey, is questioning things and learning things. So anyway, then I thought, I've got to look at that a different way, because I felt like I was betraying my parents or saying bad things or bashing my church. I wasn't, and this is why. Value your past and all the lessons you have learned. How easy it is to diminish the importance of our past and look onto our history with a critical eye. We see mistakes. We see what we think we should have known. We see what we could have done better. What we forget is that the reason we are able to see so clearly is because of the past and because of what I have learned. Often it is the very experiences that I regret that have created my vision. Value what you have learned in your past. Each lesson has led to the next. Every person and event in each part of your life has been invaluable in shaping and forming you, in creating the person you are today. Each part of your past, each person who has come into your life and shared experiences with you, has helped you to open your heart more to love, to life, to God, to others, and to yourself. Even those experiences you think of as wrong or mistakes have been an important and necessary part in creating you. Sometimes those experiences formed the most important parts of you because they created in you compassion and understanding for others. Often the most painful events of your life are the ones that opened you to your ability to bring healing, help, and hope to others. Your past taught you to love others and yourself. It has helped you become a channel for divine love and a force for good in this world. When you look back at your past, look tenderly and gently at all you have been through. Look with the eyes of the soul. See that each experience was necessary to bring you home to your heart. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that and stop resenting and regretting and think, I wouldn't be standing here and sitting here if it wasn't for the love of my parents, which was done in love. Everything that they taught me was done in love. And I, you know, with my children, was everything right? But that's all they knew. And so I, you know, grew from that. So this is just, I don't know that I would be here if it wasn't for that. So I'm trying not, you know, to regret a lot of things that happened in the past. Gosh, that was a long number two. Oh, sorry.
That this is not part of our script here, but that reminds me of that place in the Mr. Rogers movie where they're there in the Chinese restaurant, mm-hmm. and he says to the guy, some of your convictions are from your dad,
yeah.
and from the bad experiences. Not that you had bad with mm-hmm. your parents, but your dad was way off base, but you learned some things. I think that, that's so good to hear. Can I go off script a little bit, or would you rather me stick just with it?
Whatever.
Okay. So it's so interesting to me as I'm sitting here learning from you. And you were brought up in a tradition that said a woman should never teach a man. And yet you're sitting here teaching me. Mm-hmm. How's that feel? Booyah.
I said if my parents weren't passed away and they know better now, because I talk and because I was a teacher, we did have a lot of conversations about that with other women. There was a group of women in our church that I just thought, I don't understand why you need to be saying that. It went so far as there was a lady, she's about my age, that helped with Walk for Water, which raised thousands of dollars in this town to put wells in Haiti. And she did all the work. She did everything. She was, you know, we helped, but she was the, you know, the force. And the day of the walk, that morning, we always got up and talked about it and invited people. And they would not let her get up there and tell and talk about it unless there was a man on stage with her. And that was close to the end before we left. That just... And we had visited, my son went to school at Lipscomb in Nashville, and so he learned a lot of new things when he went down there. So we visited a couple churches in Nashville that were a little more progressive. And we're considered, actually, the church I went to here was supposed to be really liberal and progressive compared to the rest of the churches of Christ. And I was going to say, you probably sounded familiar if you heard me, but... And we had, toward the end, they did have, like, ladies could be in charge of education or small children. And there was a team of husband and a wife. But it was always, there was a man up there beside you. You know, they would let them teach, but not her by herself. Unless it was just all women. Like, you had to stop teaching in the elementary at fourth grade because those kids were getting baptized. So then they were considered. Then it went all to men teachers. I don't know, that may have changed. We've been gone about 3.5 years, I think. But, I mean, please, I am not bashing that denomination. I pray for them because I feel like I wish I could go and explain what it's like to be granted grace and mercy and be loved for just who you are, and to question and to find your faith. And I think they are changing. Like, there's a new minister there, and I've had conversations with him, and there's, you know, I think eventually it will come, but it's just really slow, and that's why we stayed so long. Like, we were ready to leave 10 years ago because I kept thinking, something's missing. Something's not right. But we kept on. We had refugees there, and we helped with them. Like I said, I've been questioning stuff for 10 years and wondering if this is where I'm supposed to be, if that was where I was supposed to be. So, you know, and there are beautiful people over there, and I love them dearly. I feel like I'm being judgmental the other way. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you say, now what's wrong with them? You know, why can't they see? Why don't, you know, open your eyes? But people don't want to see, and you know, they're going to be in heaven right along with me. It's not that. It's just their lives could be so much less burdensome, maybe, and more joy and more peace. Mm. So I don't even know if that answered your question. I don't remember what the question was.
It doesn't
about
matter.
Women. Oh.
No. So obviously you are all in on recovery. You're all in on what
yes.
we're doing here
and
everything. So you bump into people who seem to perk up just a little bit. I mean, some people just aren't interested. Oh, that's not for me. But when you bump into somebody who, you know, you get that body language, they're perked up a little bit. What do you say to them about pathway or recovery?
Kind of what I said before. It's not what you think. And I come and see. That's my first come and see. And it will change your life. I know that sounds so cliche. It will change your life. But... I mean, it did me, because that burden of, I will never be that spiritual. I will never be that perfect. I will never make it, no matter how hard I try. You know, and that I'm dealing with all these things, and how come I'm the only one dealing with these things? You learn that right off the bat. You're not. And it's like, if you feel like you don't belong anywhere, this is for anybody on any step of your journey, whether you're straight line religion, you know, you just, you do everything by the book, or you don't even know what it's about. I don't even think you could come here, and I know you. Some people talk about that. This is the only church you have, that you do. You don't even do, you call it big church, or some of you go other places. But I can almost bet you won't find what you have here. I mean, you might in pockets or in classes or something, but as far as just coming in, and to me, when you walk through the doors, it's like, whew, the world is back there, and you can just be you. And you're hugged, and you're loved, and you become a part. But, and you can get into it as much as you want. You can sit in the back and never talk to anybody or say anything. But you're gonna get it, or you can be like me, and you can think you. What do you call me? I have to flutter around and talk to everybody before I can leave. You know, so you can at any part of your journey. But sometimes I just feel sorry for Christians, because we're supposed to have the joy and the peace, and we're the most screwed up people, you know, or because we've been told we can't be yourself, or you shouldn't have all those things. If you were a better Christian, you wouldn't have depression. If you were a better Christian, or, you know, if you did this and that. So I think this is just the only place where your guard is down and it's authentic. And I think honesty, it's just not, where else do you get it? Totally honest with people. I think that's about all it says. I just said, you will feel free and you can breathe and let go of the past and the expectations that have burdened you down. You know, or whoever you disappointed, whether it was parents or God or what you think the world thought you should be and how we should act and stuff. And we talked about the other day about, you know, it's not all about just the Bible and going to church. Being a Christian and living this life is so much more. It's so much deeper. It's so much wider. It's just living life every day. And some people, it's a struggle every single day. You know, and it, I don't know. I think it just grows compassion to me here, and it grows empathy, and it grows non-judgmental, because I grew up learning how to be that very well, and it's been really hard, and I've talked to you about that, how things that I know that I don't think anymore flood in my mind, even after I've said I don't believe that way anymore, or I don't feel that way. I know what God thinks about me, and I know he loves me for me, and I don't have to claw and scrape and pray and hope I'm good enough. And then one of those things from the past will just bang you in the head and go, oh. And can I tell them what you told me the other day? The misconception, sure. The other night when I said, and then the old Satan comes and throws those darts in your brain and tells you that he put me right in my place. He goes, Satan's not doing that. He said, that's all God's not doing, you know. He's not, and then Rob chimed in, which was awesome. It's that stuff that has been Velcroed to you by the world and by doctrine and stuff, and, you know, which I learn something every time I come. And it's one of those places where you might not want to come, or you're like, oh, I don't want to go, but you will never be sorry you were here, I don't think. And if you are, I'm sorry that somebody didn't reach out to you, or maybe you didn't reach out to us if you left and you were still, you know, in a place where, you know, you come here to be uplifted, I hope. But if you leave worse off or not in a better place, then you need to tell somebody. And it's hard. One of the hardest things is telling somebody all your junk. Because you're not supposed to have any junk. So that's what you're told. But anyway.
Was this as bad as you thought it would be?
No.
I didn't think so.
It's easier when you're sitting there, but then sometimes apparently I ignore you and I just keep going and going and going.
I like feeling
you've unleashed. See, I've got 60 years of not being able to speak. No, I'm just kidding.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. So at this point, after you did this, if you had a blank check and said, okay, Karen, we need you to come and teach a lesson, what would you teach it on? I'm not up here anymore. You're up here teaching the lesson. What would you teach? This is a curveball. You didn't see this one coming. What would you like to teach on? Or talk about? What do we need to hear?
It would be two. Well, for me, I can't get enough about grace. I cannot. And forgiveness. Maybe would be two things I think. And then something else you asked me about what I tell people. And this band and this music and the messages that you hear from Wendell and from other people, not necessarily me, are the icing on the cake. If you come, you know, the tokens and things, that's important. But then you not only just get that, you get, this feeds me. Like I said, it's been, I got the acapella, which is beautiful. But I also get, because that's worship to me, and it's important. And I thank those of you that put in your time and effort to do that for me, because it means a lot. And the food, get free food, music.
Good food.
And get hugs and love. I mean, what's not to like about that? But it is hard, because not everybody's, you'll come in your time.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it's not when you get to the bottom.
Yeah.
Or when you don't have anywhere else to go. But are you going to let me read something else, or are you done? Wendell, don't do that. I feel like I'm. No, if you don't.
Wow. She really does mark up her books.
I do. Well, I didn't get to read much, you know, when I was a teacher and I had three kids at home and he was a firefighter on duty. I didn't get to read, so I read everything I can get my hands on. But this is just more a message for people that come here, for anybody. This is Shauna Nyquist. She says, be who you are. Be where you are. Contentment can't happen until you decide to be yourself, whatever that means. Being yourself is so much better than being a poor imitation of someone else. When you decide to be someone else, you're saying to the God who created you, I don't like what you've done here. Bad job. You dishonor the Creator when you pronounce His creation is not good enough. Robbie, we've talked about that. And I never had that said, I'm dishonoring what God made when I tell myself I'm not good enough. There is a path of life for you, and it's marked with joy and pleasure in God's presence, but you can't walk someone else's path, not your mom's or your dad's or your mentors or your friends. The God who made us, who made the moon and the stars, who made the ocean, is a God of love. He knows us. He knows what delights us, what makes us mad, what we're great at, and what we're terrible at. You are right where you're supposed to be. Be here and be all here. God changed your story the day you met Him, and He's obsessed with your life. He's obsessed with your wholeness, your healing, putting broken things back together again. He's obsessed with abundance, abandon, great love, great possibility. So many of us choose to live in darkness, defined by our brokenness, letting our failures hang around our necks like name tags announcing, this is all I am, this pain is who I am. It's not true. Your pain doesn't define you. Your failures don't define you. Your createdness defines you. Christ in His goodness defines you. God loves you, forgives you, and wants to walk with you through prayer and His word and His community. And I think that's what Pathway teaches us. Nowhere else teaches you so much about be who you are and be only that. Because I was taught what to believe and what to do and what to say. And I'm free of that, I think, right now. And I appreciate you letting me ramble.
Good stuff. Dadgummit. Very good. We'll have a lesson about March or April about forgiving grace. How about that? I don't know, just an idea.
Are you pinning me down?
No, just an idea.
We'll see what the reviews say about that.